This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. For North Carolina author Liza Wieland, three separate narratives converged in her new book, Land of Enchantment. The novel traces the experiences of three multiracial women in three different parts of the country. A young half-Navajo painter in the Southwest, a playwright in Atlanta, and a graduate student in New York. Their stories intersect around the issues and themes of art and love. Author Liza Wieland will read tonight, 7 o'clock, Quillridge Books in Raleigh. Tomorrow she's going to be in Greensboro at Scuppernong Books, and Saturday, City Lights in Silva. But first she joins us on The State of Things. Liza Wieland, good to have you here.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about these three narratives. They were kind of three separate stories at one point, right?
They were. They were written sequentially all the way through. First, the Bridget story, the painter in New Mexico. I finished up her story. There was more to be done. Another character popped into my head, Nancy Diamond, who's a budding playwright in Atlanta. And finally, the narrative of Sasha Hernandez, who's Bridget's daughter, whom she gave up for adoption, came in third. But I realized as I was putting the book together that the sort of extension, the length of those three narratives, one right after the other, did not make for a pleasant reading experience. And I wanted
you can't just do like chapter 9 and then add the second book, right?
No, and I wanted Nancy to talk sooner, and to the stories are quite interwoven, and I wanted to get that in the structure of the book.
When did it occur to you that they were one book and not three?
I always knew that they were one book, but it occurred to me the first time I read all the way through the first, then second, then third section, and this was probably now 3 years ago, and so I put the whole novel down on the floor of my study and started moving sections around, and came up with places where one would start and one would stop, and they could intersect in that
sections
way.
Sections is one thing if they're nice, neat pages, but then you start lifting quotes and ideas from one page and putting it three pages. That's a lot of work, right?
It was a lot of work.
And it gets a little daunting. And you wrote them, as I understand, you wrote the first one anyway, straight through, right?
I did.
And so, and then the other two sort of came about in series. And setting is very important in your work as well.
It is.
Tell us about the settings. They're all very different.
There's of course, New Mexico, just north of Taos.
Land of Enchantment, as it says right on the license plate.
There it is. and that's mostly around George O'Keefe's house at Ghost Ranch. The second setting is Atlanta in the 90s, which I know pretty well, having grown up there. And the third setting is New York around 9/11, which I also know from having lived there.
So maybe I will ask you to read for us, if you would.
When I told Will I was going, his eyes filled with tears. Oh, he sighed, you'll be great there. That city, it's magic. I'm so jealous. He started to talk about how summer was his favorite season in New York City, how the days begin in sunshine and silence, and everybody's got those blue paper coffee cups, the same blue as the sky, so it looks like they're all holding a piece of it in their hands. Men in press suits, women in sneakers and ankle socks below their summer frocks. Silence in the subway, plenty of noise but no voices. Nobody's a morning person, nobody who actually gets dressed and sets foot outside. Little by little, the day speaks, asks for a handout, offers a hot dog, a pretzel, tips its hat to you, winks, blows you a kiss. You're going to fall in love with it, he said. Fall, hopelessly, in love.
Liza Wieland, reading from her new novel, Land of Enchantment. What's fascinating about this book and one of the many things I love about it is that these landscapes are kind of, they're rock solid, right? I mean, they're the constants in here. And then we have all of these kind of border issues, race and ethnicity, art, and the sort of marriage and sometimes dissolution of that marriage between art and life. Let's start with art. Art is a very important theme in this book.
Art is. They're all artists. Bridget is a painter. Nancy is a playwright. Sasha is a film student who's sort of lives through film. And I think I began to be interested in writing about artists with Bridget because I heard somewhere that writing about a painter is like watching paint dry, or reading about a novel about a painter is like watching paint dry. And I thought, well, there's a challenge. And I wanted to explore the ways that the visual arts and the written art, which is, of course, the drama, can intersect and can the edges of those can blur, as you say. And filmmaking seems to be a good example of that very blurring, because there's a narrative, and often there's speech, sometimes there's not. But it's also obviously visual.
I think of the visual arts and the spoken word as sort of two different parts of the brain. At least for me, I can feel, you know, sort of I'm in different landscapes in my own mind when I'm there. Is it a kind of relief for you to have to think about the visual arts and then go back and put it into words?
It is. It's always been a pleasure of mine to look at art. I mean, I find it one of the most relaxing things to do, to just wander through a museum. And my mother was a painter, and at times in my life I've taken up watercolors just because it was relaxing. But it was a nice contrast to look at O'Keeffe's paintings and imagine Bridget's paintings, which are quite different from O'Keeffe's, and, you know, not actually enact them. I never sort of painted a Bridget painting. And then to sort of think about how language could elucidate what was being seen.
What about Georgia O'Keeffe? Again, plays a part in this novel. Is she someone who has been interesting to you for a long time?
For as long as I can remember. I named my daughter Georgia after her, not after the state I grew up in.
No, but you grew up in Atlanta, so there is some ambiguity.
People are confused sometimes. But I love the work, of course. I love the way she sort of forces the viewer to look so closely at you know, a jimson weed bloom or the inside of the skull of a deer. But I also loved her independence, that she just said she'd had it with the New York art world and the men there and went to the Southwest and, you know, had this on and off relationship, but was really her own person and solitary. I'm quite drawn to her solitude.
Well, also, if you think about her work and some of the ways these various themes work in your book, rock solid landscapes, and then the ambiguity of ethnicity, race, and art and life, a lot of her art was that it's so vivid that you think, well, that's it, I see it, and then you spend some time with it, and it becomes so many different things.
Right.
The ambiguity is what strikes you if you spend time with the painting that at first was like, well, there it is. That sure is a skull.
Yep.
Kind of great stuff.
And she actually was somewhat coy about the paintings in the biographies I've read, that she would, you know, she just didn't understand why the flowers were treated as sexual objects. She just said, that's not what's going on. And
sometimes an iris is just an iris.
That's right.
Well, we're talking about art, and I know you have a passage here that is kind of right on it. Maybe I can get you to read that.
Sure. And this is Bridget, of course. Color. Bridget already knew something about that. Color was electricity. It made things work, made you work. Color could knock you off your feet or turn you blind when you got hold of it. But that was the only way to stay alive, hold on to the color. Certain shades promised eternal life. No shades promised certain death, but some shades guaranteed boredom, and that was worse. So you had to find the good ones. Sometimes it was all a horrible mess and ooze, like the way your feet feel on the bottom of a lake. Bad, and the next move could be worse. Sometimes you just took a swipe at a canvas, the way a man did in a drunken rage. And the canvas was the woman, and the canvas was your mother. The sound of glass breaking in the background, how to paint that? Or else color was trapped inside rocks, buried there, and you had to smash the rock against another rock. Sometimes it was in a tube, and then it was expensive. Sometimes the color was all in your head. Sometimes it was on the edge of a shirt worn by a man in a disappearing car. The most perfect hue. You've longed for it all your life. That man in the car, where was he going? You had to paint him to find out.
Liza Whelan, reading from her new novel, Land of Enchantment. You know, I wonder, you had these three separate stories going, three separate narratives and a lot of themes. And I wonder, as you put them together, did you find that that some themes had been privileged over others and there were ways in which the balance had to change just for the novel to work?
I did. I found that the art, for one thing, the art wasn't so simple in all the cases, and the art wasn't the full story. And that's when the mixed race narrative began to emerge. And I think Sasha talks about this at the end of the book, the filmmaker, about how she wants to make a film called Centaur and Mermaid, which is really a series of interviews. And she, who is also mixed race, has come to the conclusion that mixed race women, I think she's thinking, she quotes a woman as believing this, are exotic creatures, are, you know, otherworldly, are between worlds. And so that notion of the exotic, the mixed race, and the standing between worlds began to emerge. And that's where I get to Nancy, who is a narrator who's no longer with us. She speaks from beyond all the way through the novel. But in that way, she is between the worlds. And so that betweenness comes forth in, you know, thinking about the character, not so much her heritage, but herself.
What about the trick of finding the voice for telling this novel and holding it all together? Did that have to change for you? Is it going to be first person, third person?
Yeah, it was a bit of a trick, but I heard their voices so clearly. And Bridget is quiet and kind of angry and perplexed by what's happened in her life, and then more determined as the novel goes on. Nancy is sort of sassy and also puzzled, but you know, wants to find out what's going on and who she should love and who loves her and where she came from. And Sasha's a little quieter and sort of feeling her way through experience. Sasha has just lost her birth mother when her section opens, so she's dealing with, you know, what is this mother concept? I have the one I don't have, and I don't have the one I had.
Well, that's the other interesting thing. We think about art as this kind of ambiguous, you know, human convention, and yet it's sort of interesting when you think about, let's say, mixed race or mixed ethnicity. Well, that's precisely a social convention, ethnicity, race. They're not for real. I mean, they're treated for real. And
right.
Believe me, you can suffer or be privileged because of it. So it doesn't mean it doesn't have consequences. But these are human-made conventions. I always think of art as sort of getting us back to kind of what it might be like had we not invented these categories. And so that's kind of what's weaving, it seems to me, these kinds of meditations that weave throughout your book.
Right. Yeah, I think, I mean, art, we have art in order not to die of the truth is the epigram of the book.
There you go. Today on The State of Things, I am talking with Liza Whelan. She is the author of her new novel. She teaches at ECU, and her novel is called Land of Enchantment, and we are talking about it today on The State of Things. Was it fun for you, or was there a moment at which you thought to yourself, Liza, what have you done to yourself? Look at all these narratives here. What are we going to do?
I did. When I read it straight through the first time, when the three were separate, and I thought, this is a boring slog. What am I going to do? And I actually thought back to other novels that I've read that do that, and how the sections are sort of arranged and can be arranged. And then I felt a little bit better. I think all of my books, there's a point at which I think I've made a mess, and I don't know how to clean it up.
Well, let's talk about your character, Sasha, in New York. She is witness to, of course, the major event in American history, the fall of the towers. Why did you pick that scene?
I picked it because I wanted to think about it myself. And what she's interested in is not only the fall of the towers, but the bodies falling out of them. And her obsession is filming them and making this film into something that people could actually look at and contemplate and think about those last moments or think about what that gesture means. And I wanted to think about it too, because it seems like the most horrific part of the whole story is because we could see those bodies, right. The bodies that were lost inside, we didn't see. And I don't know why I wanted to understand my own obsession about it and, you know, how to think about that is a public last moment, and that's what Sasha's interested in her film.
I think I've got time for one last reading, if you
would. Okay. This is actually about a different kind of falling. And the novel's full of fallings, falling in love, falling out of love, falling towards a person or away. And, of course, the falling that Sasha witnesses has a terrible ending, but here's an example of one that doesn't have quite so terrible an ending. These are Nancy's lovers, Rodney and Will, and they're playing basketball with a group of visiting Tibetan monks. Just then, in the mighty twirl of a rebound, Rodney falls and takes one of the monks down with him. Both lie still, not really hurt, trying to catch their breath, smiling a little, glad for the forced break. But this gives me time to see them. The spread of the monk's robe over Rodney's leg looks like blood, a hideous injury, amputation. My hand flies to my mouth, even though I know nothing's wrong. They can't see it, the men. They're too close. I'm suddenly quite sure I love Rodney, and I also love Will, and that these loves are going to cause me terrible pain sometime very soon. Then the monk rolls away, and it's miraculous. Rodney's legs are restored, just as they were before his fall. The monk rises, turns, extends his arm. Rodney sits up, clasps the monk's hand, smiles broadly. His teeth gleam. I swear they twinkle, like in cartoons. The monk's small brown hand inside Rodney's looks like it could be mine. Will puts his arms around both of them, asks if they're all right. They're a gorgeous trio. They're an ad for something you know you need, even though you can't name it, and you're not sure if it's even been invented yet.
Liza Wieland, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Liza Wieland is the author of Land of Enchantment. She's going to read tonight, 7 o'clock, Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh. Tomorrow she's going to be in Greensboro at Scuppernong Books, and Saturday, City Lights Books in Silva. If you missed all that, go to our website, please, stateofthings.org. Got lots of details there. State of Things produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Mawagdi, and Will Michaels. Robin Copley is our technical director. Jess Clark is our intern. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. And North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.